This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
This is iFanboy Media Explode, episode 26, Top Gun Maverick.
You can tell Ron needs this today.
Welcome to iFanboy Media Split, episode 26. We're talking about Top Gun Maverick. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And Ron Richards.
Hello.
This is the show brought to you by the patrons at patreon.com/iFanboy. They unlock the stretch goal that unlocked the show. That's how we do it every month, so thanks to them for doing so. There'll be spoilers for what we talk about on the show. We'll be talking about several things, not just Top Gun Maverick, but there'll be spoilers for all of it, just in case you want to be careful, use the show notes. And let's just dive right into it, because we've got a lot to talk about. We're going to start, as we always do, with what we've been enjoying or watching or reading or exploring or just experiencing.
Exploring and experiencing, like our sexuality.
That sounds like a different thing.
Connor's like, so listen, guys, I went to a club.
I'm trying to get us into a new category.
Had someone else move in with me and the wife.
So we go over to the house, and it's got a shag rug. And
everyone's got mustaches.
It's a bowl.
And gold chains.
There's a bowl.
I said, I don't have keys. I said, put them in anyway.
I like that our idea of strange sexuality is like mid-70s. Meanwhile,
there's
all these words and things today that we have no idea about.
No. Yeah, no.
But we're like, is there a van?
If I riff
involved
on those, I could cancel us. If we riff on key parties in the 70s, there's no canceling us.
Still.
Let's talk about what we've been enjoying. Who wants to start?
Oh man. I want to hear about what you've been enjoying, Connor. Okay. What you've been exploring and experimenting with. And by the way, just so you know, I did the little thing with my hands when I said experimenting.
I see. I'm going to mention several things here quickly. One is, I finished season one of the Starz series Gaslit, which starred Julia Roberts and Sean Penn.
Oh, that was the show. I saw an article that's like Julia Roberts is in a TV show that nobody knows exists.
Yeah. I remember that article.
Ostensibly about Martha Mitchell, who was the wife of John Mitchell, the attorney general for Richard Nixon. But it was really just a whole show about Watergate. In fact, in the first half of the show, she wasn't even the main character. It was John Dean.
You really like Watergate.
Well, yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Somebody mentions Watergate, and Connor's like, oh, I'm such a big fan of it, you know?
I
it's a fascinating
love
point, which the country broke for good.
Yeah.
It's fascinating tone. It was a little heightened. You guys will love this name. Shea Whigham played an out-of-this-world G. Gordon Liddy. Nice. And every time he came on screen, it was like magic.
I saw a trailer for something.
He's in a Mission Impossible trailer.
That must have been what it was. It was some movie that I didn't expect to see Shea Whigham, and I was like, was that Shea Whigham?
You see him for a brief second, and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yep. Okay, good.
Brief aside on that same thing. I'm watching that trailer, and I go, how does Tom Cruise look so much younger than Simon Pegg?
Because Simon Pegg drank a lot.
Furthermore, I can't ever remember Simon Pegg's name, so I call him Tim, which was his character in Spaced, because that's the only thing I can remember when I see his name.
That's a very Josh thing to do. Yep.
This featured a great cast. It had Chris Messina. It had Dan Stevens playing John Dean.
Hey, Chris Messina went to my high school.
I did really enjoy it. I thought it was a little all over the place and didn't know exactly what I wanted it to be. But the reason why I wanted to mention it was because, you know, the break-in of Watergate happens and all of the burglars are being arraigned. And that's the scene that opens up basically all the president's men. Mm-hmm. Robert Redford, you know, he gets sent to the courthouse. His Bob Woodward character gets into the courthouse to cover the arraignment. And he notices there's a lawyer that there shouldn't be there. And that's what starts the whole ball rolling. Well, here we see that same scene, but shot in reverse from the back. Because in the movie, it's shot from the judge's point of view. And in the movie, the two other characters are talking in the back. And then a blonde guy walks by and goes to the front of the courtroom and sits next to another dude. And then in the background, you very faintly hear the dialogue from the movie. And I thought that was this crazy, brilliant thing. And then later on, we see Woodward from the front, and they cast a guy who looks like Redford. And then later on, we see him again walk through the newsroom, and Julia Roberts' character's like, who is that? And they go, that's Bob Woodward. She goes, he is handsome. And I was just kept playing with the idea that Robert Redford was in this universe playing Bob Woodward.
And Bob Woodward does not look like Robert Redford.
No, not at all. Not even a little bit. It was just funny. They cast this guy who looked like 70s Redford to play Woodward. But anyway, I enjoyed that show. If you like history and politics and all that stuff, it was interesting. It was really interesting. Sean Penn in a crazy fat suit playing John Mitchell.
That's cool.
Boy, that sounds like a hell of a show that no one knows about.
Yeah.
The cast you just described was insane.
And I even list all the people in the show. Yeah, John Carroll Lynch, Chris Bauer, Hamish Linklater, Carlos Valdez, Ron from Flash.
Wow.
Nat Faxon. It was a great cast. And there's just too many shows, as we all know. There's been 100 articles.
Too many shows.
You can't possibly watch them all. Two shows I'm currently watching. In fact, one of them I literally paused to come up here to do the show. One is Dark Winds on AMC. It premiered last week. And it's the latest adaptation of Tony Hillerman's novels, which I'm a huge fan of. This is the Lee Porn and Chi novel. So this is the latest show that is about American Indian characters, featuring an entire American Indian production crew and staff and writers, and really, really good so far. There are only two episodes into six. It's a six-episode first season. It stars Zahn McLaren as Joe Leaphorn. You've seen him in a lot of things lately. He was in Hawkeye. He was in Westworld. He was in Fargo. He's terrific. Even though they've changed his character and they changed the other main character a lot from the books, which I'm still wrapping my head around. It's a really, really good show so far. Really interesting period piece crime drama set in the 70s on the Navajo Reservation. And I'm really enjoying it. And finally, the show that I literally paused to come up here to do the show was The Old Man on FX, or also Hulu, if you have Hulu.
I watched the pilot last night.
I really enjoyed it. I'm halfway through episode two right now.
That's the Jeff Bridges one, right?
Yeah.
Jeff Bridges and John Lithgow.
Right.
And they've introduced two characters in the second episode, Amy Brenneman and Alia Shalcott.
That reminds me, I walked by Alan Alda the other day on the Upper West Side.
There you go.
He was with a woman was, and he's like, hands were all shaken, and the woman was holding his arm as they walked. Yeah, old.
Did you hear his voice, though, and feel instantly comforted? I would have.
No, but I'm saying, what happened was that it was a don't walk sign. It was like, you know, it was a light, and I was on the one side of the street, and he was across the street. So I spent the whole time waiting to walk, looking, like, I noticed him immediately, and I was like, don't act like you noticed them, you know, like, yeah, be cool around freaking 80-year-old Alan Alda. So
he's got to be older than that.
The thing is, seeing him, though, it's not like you're going to be like, oh, my God, I love you. Like, you're just great. He's just
great.
You're just
so
good.
He's 86. Yeah. He's 86. Yeah.
If he's in anything, the thing is better. Like, he's just great.
He's podcasting now. That's what he's doing.
I was trying to think of, because I was like, wow, he didn't look that old when I just saw him on TV. But then I remembered that was it the beginning of The Good Fight or the end of The Good Wife?
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
And that was at least 5 years ago. I was like,
probably.
Yeah.
The Old Man is a hard, dark, drama about a ex-CIA operative who has been living off the grid, hidden for 30 years, who's now been pulled back into the game. And it's a very un-Jeff Bridges-like role. The second episode, Josh, more than the first, really delves into the idea of, is he a good guy or not? Like, there's a whole conversation about being the villain of your story and not realizing it. I think it's very well written, and I think the two main guys, you know, it's Bridges and Lithgow are terrific, and I'm looking forward to more of it. What, did you like it at all?
Kinda. It was one of those things where when I watched it, it was, like, real quiet and slow.
Yes, it's very, I love the pacing of it,
But I don't know that I was in the mood for that thing at the time, if that makes sense. I was like, all right, let's be entertained by something. And I was like, oh, I got to work for this.
You have to pay attention. In fact, I rewound about 15 minutes in the second episode because I was doing something else while watching. Yeah. I was like, nope, I missed some very important things.
So I thought it was really good, but I don't know that I so much enjoyed it at that time, if that
I gotcha. And finally, the last thing I told you guys in the Patreon hangout when we did it earlier this week, I saw Steve Martin and Martin Short's live show over the weekend. I hadn't seen the Netflix special, so I didn't know anything about it or what to expect. I don't know how much the act is legacy act and how much is new, although some of the jokes were topical, so I imagine there's some things. And also, our buddy Hank saw them, and we were talking about the different jokes, and he said a bunch of the stuff I said was new, so maybe they...
Yeah, I'm sure they refreshed it a little, yeah.
Oh my God, I laughed so hard for an hour and 40 minutes.
They're very funny people.
They're very funny people.
And they're very funny together, too.
They're old good friends. I mean, I read Martin Short's autobiography, and their families go on vacation together. Like, they are not just performing partners.
Wouldn't you love to go on that vacation?
Yes. Yes. And in fact, there's a funny bit in the thing about them being on vacation and getting paparazzi'd on the beach. They're very funny. Plus, Steve Martin's band plays in the middle for about 10 minutes, and they were really great.
Nice.
It was just a great time, you know, almost like an old-time sort of not vaudeville, but an old-time, let's go to the club and see a show, you know, like, you had comedians and you had a band.
We were doing vaudeville.
And so they were really great. If you're in your area, it's totally worth it. Martin Short must bathe in the blood of children because, like, he's 71 years old and jumping around the stage and jumping on top of pianos, and he commits.
All right, well, that's all the time we have, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in.
I was just going to say, I love how we're doing a Connor solo show. Which Connor, what have you been reading?
I'm done. I'm finished. I'm done.
I watched Pistol on FX, which is Danny Boyle.
I haven't started watching it yet. It's on my list.
Know what happens.
Well, I know. But everything I've read has not been favorable. Do you agree or disagree?
I disagree.
Okay.
I'm a Danny Boyle fanboy. I know the story of the Sex Pistols fairly well. You know, I've read enough about it. I read Chrissy Hynde's memoir.
Can we make a t-shirt, by the way, that says, quote, I read Chrissy Hynde's memoir, Josh Flanagan?
John Worster said it's like the most rock and roll memoir I've ever read in my life, and I've heard that.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, she was there for everything. She's like Forrest Gump, and she's also like an incredible artist. Anyway, I don't know that I'm in a position to judge it objectively because I was really excited about it. I'm a Danny Boyle fanboy. I love the Sex Pistols.
Do you love the Sex Pistols?
Absolutely. No, I totally do, and I have for a long time. I think that album is perfect.
Fascinating.
It's just the way it sounds. It's all the thing, and I know that it's not that people are like, oh, that's the first punk album. I know it's not. I know it's just part of a whole movement, and that movement was actually very, very short. But as a sort of symbol of the whole thing, of such a strange time in England, and the personalities of those people involved, it's fascinating.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, the moment in time that they represent, I do find fascinating. And I agree with you. I mean, it's a good record for what it is. But, like, just the things that, like, the moment in time that it represents, like, the fact that, like, the one Sex Pistols show in Manchester that was attended by everybody from that went on to the Manchester scene, like, that were all, like, there was, like, 20 people in the crowd, but it was all, like, everyone that went on to do Joy Division and what's his name?
Yep.
The guy Steve Coogan played in Party People, like, stuff like that. Just, like, that moment, that kind of swirling, and then also what it did for, you know, not the movement, but like the, you know, just like the, again, that moment of time.
It's kind of the beginning and the end of punk in England, and that was kind of it. And it was so short. And anyway, like all the stuff around it, I think that the show captured those parts of it. And I think if you were looking for, I guess, more of a straightforward biopic, I don't know, it was actually fairly straightforward. You know, it was like a Danny Boyle movie that was kind of lengthened out. I really like the casting. Thomas Brodie Sangster, the drummer kid from Love Actually, plays Malcolm McLaren, and he's fantastic. He is, he's so good. The guy that they got to play, John Lydon, it's not like an impression of John Lydon, but, like, he's completely strange, and there's nobody like John Lydon. It's impossible to tell if it's an act or not, and I think the guy does that really well. It focuses mostly around Steve Jones, who I think is the one kind of telling the story. You know, it's like his, I don't know if it's his memoir or whatever.
Well, it's based on his book, right? Yeah. I mean, it's.
So he's the sort of center of it, and there's that thing that, you know, Steve Jones is always like, well, he couldn't sing and I couldn't play, you know, and they get into that, and they actually kind of go through the thing where, at the beginning, he can't play.
None of them could, yeah.
Glenn Matlock could play, and Paul Cook could play.
Vicious couldn't.
No, but that's a different story. They go through that, too. Like, it goes all the way through Sid and Nancy to when they walk off the stage. Like, that's the six episodes of it, and that's it. It closes. You know, my wife and I watched it together. She gave a shit about the Sex Pistols. You know, I thought it's visually interesting. It's really well cast. I mean, when are you going to see that? It's better than the Wu-Tang Show, which I also loved. Yeah. You know, like, so, no, I really enjoyed it. I was looking forward to it, and I'm glad I wasn't disappointed. Because if it was bad, I would have known.
Yeah.
I'm not going to nitpick it to death. And maybe if I was, like, chapter and verse on everything that happened in the Sex Pistols, I'd be like, it's not right. But I think in terms of the feeling, Chrissy Hynde was very, very prominently featured as part of the story, which is good because she was part of it. The girl they got to play Chrissy Hynde was amazing. She sounded exactly like her speaking voice. I was like, how do you do this? Because I listened to Chrissy Hynde's whole audiobook, so I know her voice really well. And that girl just killed it. And she was really good. She was like enigmatic and interesting and cool. Yeah, I really enjoyed it, which isn't the same thing as to say it's really, really good, but I really enjoyed it.
Cool.
Ron, did you watch it?
No, it's on my list. I haven't watched it yet. We've been engrossed in the thing I'm going to talk about.
Okay.
It is on the list. It's soon. It's hard with, A, everything that's coming out.
Yep.
The volume, and then also it's all fractured and all over the place, and it's just available all the time, so there's no urgency.
Yes. And then you wait too long, and then it gets buried under 15 other shows.
Right. It gets buried or it gets stale, unless you really, really want to remember it. And so, I don't know, Josh, are you done, or are we trying? This is a natural transition.
No, I was just saying, like, the actual thing was that, like, I really wanted to see it. So as soon as I saw it was available, I got on it.
I really want to see it. I keep reminding myself. And, like, what happens is that my wife and I, like, we at some, either I'm making dinner or we're, like, putting the kids to bed or just put the kids to bed. We're like, are we watching TV tonight? All right, what do you want to watch? And then we just run through this mental list of, like, well, we started the Orville. You know, we got two more to go on this one. We got, you know, like, I'm trying. And if I can't, I've only got so much RAM in my head to keep track of all that stuff. And if it can't keep it on that list, then it drops off, you know, like, for example, like Russian Doll, a show that we loved on Netflix, came back with a season two with Natasha Lyonne. I haven't even started watching it just because, like, it came and went so quickly.
Yeah.
And because there's so much, you know, and also because, like, I'm not talking to as much people about media as I did at work or, you know, all that sort of stuff. Like, I tried writing it down. I tried putting it on lists, on apps and things like that. But you just can't. At the end of the day, you just can't. And then what happens is that we end up falling, I don't want to say into a rut, but falling into a gap of just, like, because the thing is that, like, both me and my wife agree, we're somewhat, I'll say it, we're somewhat anti-binge watching. Like, I think we enjoy watching an episode and then waiting a few days and watching the next one, you know what I mean? Or waiting a week and that sort of thing, because it gives you time to watch other things, but also, you know, builds anticipation and speculation and all that sort of stuff. But at any given point, we've only got like three shows in the mix, right? Yeah. And so, yeah, it's just hard.
I mean,
it's
most of the time, we just start watching ER. It's just like, we were into
it's fair,
yeah.
That's which fair.
Is what I tend to do,
and that's exactly why Netflix was doing so well for so long, is because they had all the legacy shows, and people would just say, "Fuck it, I'm watching The Office."
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
exactly.
But besides that, like, you know, I know Sunday nights we usually watch whatever the episode was, like Winning Time, and then we were watching The Time Traveler's Wife. But other than the Sunday nights, it's always like, "What are we going to do?" ER. It's just that we happen to watch Pistols, so we remember to do that.
Yeah. So in terms of what we've been watching, I feel like I mentioned in the last episode, where last time we convened here, where we started watching it, but we finished The Offer on Paramount Plus. So 10 episodes all about the making of The Godfather. A, you guys got to watch it. B, clearly deviated from reality, but in the best for drama of television way. You know, and so, like, part of the fun is, like, we would finish an episode and then we'd talk about, like, okay, well, what really happened? And so it, like, it inspires talking about the what really happened aspect.
Did
of
they
it.
Use Robert Evans' book for the script? Is because that's your problem right there.
And that's where it also deviates. It was really interesting.
From the producer's point of view.
In the credits, it says, what does it say? It says, like, based on the experiences of Albert S. Ruddy, with special thanks to a guy who wrote a book about The Godfather. So it's not even based on a book. The guy just, like, the producer of The Godfather got with his production team and told them what happened, and then they fact-checked it with whatever this book that they based it on. And there is stuff that deviates, and when you guys watch it, we can talk in more detail about what it is. But still, the story is fascinating, and it's based in enough reality to be engaging. And I think I did say talk about it last time, but Matthew Good, who was on The Good Wife, doing a great, similar, Josh, I think, to, you know, what you're talking about with the guy doing Johnny Lydon on Pistol, you know, doing a great portrayal of Bob Evans, you know, not necessarily doing an impression, making it his own, but getting the essence of Evans. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because, you know, this was a 10-episode limited series that was produced to coincide with the 50th anniversary of The Godfather, you know, Paramount getting all kind of, you know, transmedia on it. And it got panned when it first came out, but then as people watch it, they're like, oh, this is actually really, you know, I don't know if I would say it was good, but it was engaging. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So with Miles Teller from Top Gun Maverick, which we're going to talk about.
Not my tempo.
What I do find interesting about it is that, you know, coming out of the finished season, I saw all these blog posts like, will there be a season two and blah, blah, blah. and like articles explaining, like, it's a 10-episode limited series about The Godfather, so there's probably not going to be a season two. But if you ask me, and if I worked at Paramount Plus, and if anyone's listening who works at Paramount Plus, get Matthew Good and then do another season and make it about Chinatown.
Yeah. Do Chinatown.
You keep Evans as the through line, right? And then go back and do one about Rosemary's Baby. You know, and
top
then
the
do,
mountain,
you know, like, yeah, like all that sort of, because like, honestly,
love story.
Evans was the backbone of this story and the backbone of, you know, whatever the 10 years of Paramount that he was at. Yeah, do love story. Like, oh, it was great. So I really, really want you guys to watch it. I know the list is long and there's lots of stuff to do.
No,
it,
but really,
and Josh, you're not even on Paramount Plus, but like it's worth the $4.99 or whatever it is for Paramount Plus.
100%. I plan to.
Yeah. The other note, which I have, which I know we got to move on, but in the I can't believe this actually happened kind of category would be Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers on Disney Plus. This is the movie about Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers that came out on Disney Plus, and it's starring John Mulaney and Andy Samberg as Chip and Dale. Mm-hmm. Here's my one-line pitch. Who Framed Roger Rabbit for the 21st century?
Yeah, I saw the trailer.
There are so many cameos and characters and stuff they did with characters where I'm like, how did they get away with this? Mm-hmm. It was like one of those, like, where, like, how did Disney of all companies be like, yeah, put that up on the platform, right? Like, it honestly is crazy.
You're talking about non-Disney characters or Disney characters?
Both. So non-Disney characters that are in the movie, as well as Disney characters that they, because the whole premise is that it takes place now.
Wait, but where are we now? Are we now?
Wait, we're now or then?
It takes place now.
Oh, but wait, what happened to then? You missed it.
That was then.
Just now.
They do this whole explanation of how they got there, and they show like Chip and Dale and Rescue Rangers like in their heyday in the early 90s, right? And then now here we are in 2020s, and Dale is doing the Comic-Con circuit, and he's there. He's at a table next to Lumiere from Beauty and the Beast and across from Tigra from Thundercats, right? And it's just like, what the fuck is this, right? And so they take that and they apply that to a lot of different characters. So like Will Arnett plays a middle-aged, overweight Peter Pan.
Right.
Which is like a cornerstone Disney character.
So it's like the Lego movie.
They let them do this. Yeah, I guess. It's a little bit... Yeah, it is very Lego movie-esque in that. But it's also... I give it more akin to Who Framed Roger Rabbit than Lego movie.
Can I... For me, Who Framed Roger Rabbit is a real touchstone movie. I think that was the first,
sure.
Like... I mean, now I have the words for it, but I didn't then. But that sort of postmodern thing...
Yeah.
Where you sort of are
yeah.
like, oh, this is like a big world and this all means something and there's a historical context for it. And at the same time, it was like super funny and entertaining and historic at the same time. And I don't know, we don't talk about it that much, but that was a really big deal for me.
It was a landmark film, yeah, for sure. Just the animation with the live action, but that's something that Disney did back to the, you know, Mary Poppins and that sort of thing, but it continued it. And this is very much in that vein, but like, there's also McGruff the Crime Dog.
Right.
And like MC Scat Cat and Paula Abdul as herself, right? Like, so it's just like, it's definitely from the you know, knowing that, you know, Akiva Schaffer directed it, right? And like, and Mulaney and Samberg and all, like, it's from that corner of the SNL kind of comedy kind of stuff. So you get a sense of it. But like, it was funny. I mean, and as a fan of Chip and Dale and as a fan of Disney and as a fan of cartoons of that age and the, like, you know, the nostalgia factor and stuff like that, you know, it's very postmodern, very meta, you know, but like was entertaining. I recommend it.
The trailer was funny, so I'm
yeah. The movie's funny. You should check it out. You'll never watch it, will you, Connor?
Like we said, I don't have time to watch all these things I really want to watch.
I will.
Let alone the things I think I might watch.
Okay,
I will.
But I'm not against it. I saw the trailer, thought that looks funny.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, good.
Is it because Megan won't watch it?
I don't know. I don't know. We've never talked about it.
Probably not, no. The other day we were talking about Chippendale Rescue Rangers, weirdly, which she didn't grow up with.
I didn't either.
Oh, I did.
I didn't watch it. I was DuckTales, and that was about it.
DuckTales?
DuckTales led right into it. Yeah, the Darkwing, exactly. Darkwing Duck and Tailspin.
I didn't watch Darkwing Duck or Chippendales.
Oh, you didn't watch Darkwing Duck of all characters. That's right up your alley.
He was a serious, but he had to go read the news. That's about the time that the Times would arrive, and 8-year-old Connor was like, excuse me.
And he had to frantically write letters with the headlines to send to his friends.
He was little Connor's just outraged at what Tip O'Neill did that day.
He's at the photocopier at the library making the Connor Daily.
All right, so let's...
Mom, I need a fax machine.
Talk about Top Gun, the movie on everyone's lips these last month or so.
Yeah.
Did anybody watch or rewatch the original Top Gun in preparation for Top Gun Maverick?
Yes.
Of course, on Paramount.
I did as well, yes.
Yeah, Paramount Plus.
I own the Blu-ray.
Wow, all right.
Which I'm surprised about.
I have a couple of key observations from the rewatch of Top Gun, but I don't know, Connor, how you want to handle
it. We're not going to go super deep, but I hadn't watched it. It had to have been at least 20 years since I watched it.
Yeah.
It reminded me how much of a cultural juggernaut it was and how much just that little opening music bit took me right back to that time.
Oh, I love that song. Near, near, near. The guitar, like the clean guitar sound.
But I even remember it from the video game. The Nintendo game which I had, where it was like the 8-bit version of it. Yeah. It was such a cultural thing. Josh, didn't your brother come out to the Top Gun music at your wedding?
It's possible.
I think he did.
He was very into that as a thing. Like as an aesthetic would be like the Pete Maverick thing.
Yeah.
Mitchell.
Yeah.
I was surprised how tight and taut that movie is. It's like under 2 hours. Uh-huh. And they don't waste any time in that movie.
Well, that's because there's no plot, so it's really easy not to waste time.
Yeah,
it's an hour 50.
Connor, that's one of my observations. So I have three observations about this film I'll share right now.
Tony Scott directed it.
One was how short it was.
Yep.
Right? And just tight and to the point and like really made me miss movies of the 80s that were short.
Yeah.
Because it was funny because one of the things in the Godfather, in The Offer, when they get to the point of editing is the argument over the length, right? And how, you know, the business guys at Paramount wanted it to be shorter so they could show it more times in theaters. But, you know, but then Evans was like, no, the shorter version's a trailer. You need the whole movie. And my wife turned to me and she's like, so why is every movie 3 hours now? I was like, yeah, I know, it's a problem. So it was short and tight. My second observation is there more of an MVP of the 80s than Michael Ironside?
No. And 90s.
But he really shined in the 80s. But yeah, Michael Ironside makes every production better.
Starship Troopers, he showed up on ER for a little while.
Yeah. And my last observation is that I don't think there's a scene in this movie where Tom Cruise is not either in a jet or on a motorcycle.
He needs speed.
Seriously, when he is not in that plane, he's on that motorcycle. When he's not on that motorcycle, he's not in the movie. That's it.
I was pleasantly surprised to see there wasn't a lot of like, ooh, except for the fact that there's one black character
who
is a pilot and his name is Sundown.
Yeah.
And I could not believe it. Could not believe it.
That's probably. I was taken aback by the fact that like I couldn't tell you what the story is right now. If I did, it would sound like he goes to school and he wants to be the best pilot.
Well, it's the same story as the second one.
Yeah, But then they train
and they have a battle.
Then there's a threat from an unnamed enemy.
They train and then there's a jockeying for a position.
Which, by the way, I will gladly give Tony Scott and Jerry Bruckheimer and Don Simpson and everyone else involved in this production all the credit in the world for never naming the enemy.
Well,
I'm sure there was a reason.
Because that makes this timeless. right? If they had said it's Russia, then you're in that time period or whatever it is. But the fact that and not to spoil the latest movie, that they followed suit with that same thing, and it's some random unknown enemy, and you think you know what it is, and then they go to attack them, and there's snow on the ground. It's like, where am I in the world?
I mean, well done.
Slovenia.
I feel like there was a reason for it, though.
Korea.
The reason was, like, I think the army didn't want them to, or the navy.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, when they made this, they were planning on showing it in Russia.
The Cold War wasn't over.
Yeah.
It was 86.
Well, no,
you
no, no.
You just do a movie
no,
with
sorry,
Tom Cruise.
No, I'm sorry. The new
kills
one.
Kills Russians.
I mean the new one.
Yeah, I'm talking about the old original one.
Right. I know. I'm just saying it was the same thing I thought. It was like, they can't now because cinema's too global or whatever. But I could tell you what the goals and the stuff that the characters were going through in the new movie. And this one, not so much. I mean, whatever it was incredibly surface. It is the most surface, superficial movie.
Well, it's 80s.
I mean, yes, they were more so then, but this one takes the cake.
Yeah. It's a very similar structure to Heartbreak Ridge, the Clint Eastwood movie about the Panama War, where the new recruits train and they go fight. Like, it's just sort of like the 80s structure was, mm-hmm. you know, these guys are jockeying in a not at all homoerotic way to be the best guy in the group.
With a lot of homoeroticism.
Then it's just a sexy
volleyball game. I don't know why we got to make a thing out of it.
Val Kilmer's terrific in it. I forgot Tim Robbins was in it. I don't know how he even fit in that plane. He's like 6'9".
Yeah, I thought the same thing. And at the end, I was watching to see like how he's they can't put him next to Tom Cruise because he's like 6'7". I mean, he's huge.
Yeah.
I don't even know how a person like that becomes a mainstream actor. It doesn't make sense. But at one point, I looked and I was like, oh, Tom Cruise is clearly on an Apple box right there. But like you never see his face, Tim Robbins. I remember because I saw his name in the credits and I was like, who the hell's he in this? And then at one point I kind of saw his eyes. I was like, that's him. And then he takes over for Goose. Like he's the new Goose. Yeah. He's Goose 2.
He's Goose 2. It was incredibly fun. I really enjoyed watching it. You know, Tom Cruise he hadn't quite gone totally over. Like he hadn't fixed his teeth yet. He hadn't fixed his eyebrows yet. Like, he was still a little rough around the edges, but still incredibly charming and just emanates off the screen. That's what a movie star does, right? You can't take your eyes off him no matter how weird or crazy they are. And he's like that on the screen. And Anthony Edwards, he's a classic 80s character in Goose.
It's funny, they said his name over and over in the new movie, and I was like, I had no idea what his name was. So his name was Bradshaw, no shit.
Oh, yeah, all of them. I didn't know Maverick's name was Pete Mitchell. And they called him Pete Mitchell. I was like, who?
Yeah, who's that guy?
So, and like Rick Rossovich, and we were talking.
Oh, Rick Rossovich is my favorite. He's fantastic.
We were talking afterwards, and there was three major ER players in the film from Rick Rossovich, Michael Ironside, and Anthony Edwards.
Yeah,
I guess long enough before ER.
10 years.
Well, it's like a good 10 years, right? Yeah,
8 years.
Eight? No.
And the show started.
It was eight. You're 86, right.
86.
You're right. 86 to 94. Yeah. Wow.
And what's interesting, and I was trying to explain to somebody earlier, was that everyone I knew as a kid, one of my friends, we all knew what a MiG was. We all knew an F-14 Tomcat.
Yep. That was the thing.
We had the model planes.
Like F-14 Tomcats were super cool for a while.
Yeah.
Like, I had a shirt with one on it for some reason.
There was a computer game called the F-14 Tomcat, where it was a flight simulator. I remember playing that all the time.
So, like, in the new movie, when they mentioned the F-14 Tomcat, I went, ooh.
I'm fairly certain that even though this is the Navy, but this plus Iron Eagle fueled my dreams of going to the Air Force Academy in fifth grade.
I can't see that.
That's why they made the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why the Pentagon cooperated.
It's like a recruitment film, right?
Yeah.
Didn't pursue that dream, by the way.
Mm-mm. No.
Yeah.
The first one has got that 80s thing, but it's incredibly fun and action-packed and tight, and it's worth the watch. But let's talk about the new one. Top Gun Maverick, directed by a guy I don't know, Joseph Kosinski.
He did what movie he did? He did something. Jurassic Park? No. What did he do?
He did Tron Legacy.
Tron Legacy. That's what it was. Yeah. Yeah.
And a bunch of other things that are not a hit.
He did Tom Cruise's teeth. That's where they got him.
And written by several people, but including Christopher McQuire, who is Tom Cruise's Mission Impossible writer-director. So he got his people on this one.
He did The Last Samurai. He did the incomparable and utterly rewatchable Valkyrie. Like, he's his guy, and he's a really good writer.
He's an Oscar-winning screenwriter. He wrote Usual Suspects.
Yeah, that's what he did beforehand.
So I think it's fair to say when this was announced originally, everyone was like, ugh, really?
Yeah.
We're going to do Top Gun 30 years later.
And that was like 5 years ago.
Right. Yeah. Well, this movie was shot many years ago. It wasn't just like,
yeah.
It was shot pre-pandemic. It's been on the shelf for 2 years.
Oddly enough, Tom Cruise looks younger now. I can't explain it, but.
So I remember thinking, oh, man.
Yeah, right there with you.
The return on these movies that are 30 years later are just really low.
Yeah.
But I also knew that it was only people our age who really probably cared.
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with it, but I go into the bathroom after the thing, and it's lined up with, like, genuine boomers from Massachusetts.
Yep.
And they were like, man, that's great. And there was one guy in the bathroom, and, like, he has a line. He looks, he goes, it's like Foxborough, right? And I was like, uh-huh. But I've never seen that many people, like, my mom's age who were, like, turning out to a movie and were fucking thrilled.
It's too funny.
I think the twist on this whole thing is it turns out it's an incredibly good action movie.
What, that was the thing that got me. At some point, one of the ads were like 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I was like, what? Okay, fine. Yeah. And at that point, I was able to, because, you know, you can fake with a kind of high score. But in the 90s, that usually says something.
Here's the thing. It's in the same vein as The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
The not reboot, right? Where it's like revisiting the characters, advancing them in age, introducing new characters, picking up the story, all that sort of stuff. So it's in that ballpark, but somehow the alchemy got it right. And I'll be damned if I didn't walk out going, oh man, that was a hell of a good time.
I've seen it twice.
Yeah.
Really?
The second time, just as much fun as the first time. I mean, I went when it opened, and then I went for Father's Day, and it was packed on Father's Day. Shocking.
Yeah,
that's true.
Like there was a lot of kids who were like, want to go see Top Gun? But it even works on its own. I mean, I think it's obviously more impactful if you've seen the original and all the stuff with Goose, but like, you can see this movie on its own. It gives you enough context.
It's a much better movie in objective terms,
than the first one.
It's got more weight to it. It's got more gravitas.
There's real characterization.
Yeah.
If you watch the original Top Gun, it's a marvel of movie making. It is not far off from Lawrence of Arabia in terms of like shooting a thing that should be impossible to shoot.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I was really impressed by the second one because it would have been so easy for them to do everything in CGI. And you would know. You know, like CGI is amazing, but you know it when you see it. I don't know how much of it was practical, but it really felt like it was practically shot. And I'm assuming it was since he's so into shooting all the practical stuff from Mission Impossible.
Well, didn't you get the little intro with him saying real planes, real speed, real G's?
No, but I knew that. Actually, maybe
you didn't get that? I got it both
theaters.
The thing
where he like thanks everybody for coming back to the theater? Yeah. I think my wife and I were just looking at him going, oh, he's starting to look like Redford now. That's the thing we were.
Well, in that thing that he said, we shot it in real planes with real speed and real G's.
But you could tell. That was the point is that, and I really liked that because, you know, just like Chris Nolan or whatever, like movies that are shot with real effects look much fucking better. And
you can see it on his face when they were pulling the G's, going, and it was flying straight up, and his face started sort of melting. Every time he slammed into the window, you know, I know Ron was thinking about that, but slammed into the cockpit.
I would say there are far too many shots of old Tom Cruise head slamming into the side of the cockpit from the G-Force. I appreciate the realism of it, but there were just one too many shots of that for me.
You know what? I didn't think so because I think that really grounded it in a way, even more than the last one. The things where he's sort of going left and right and left and right.
Yeah,
like it's really easy to think of those planes as like it's a smooth ride or whatever, but especially with the older ones, because they're all in older planes, they're like tanks that go real fast. You know, like there's clicks and pieces of metal, and I think that sold that better than the first movie did, was that like you're fighting this thing to a certain extent, which, you know, like if you think about like the right stuff and all that stuff going back to it, it feels like that. I couldn't help but think like the whole time I was doing the math and I was like, he has to be at least 60 in this movie. And I'm almost positive they don't let 60-year-olds do this.
I mean, he's like in his late 50s. They don't let people in the late 50s do it either.
Yeah. Let's see. 36 years since the last movie. All right. So
the first movie, you know, it's basically all fighter pilot action, right? So it's almost antiseptic because they're in planes and they shoot missiles at each other. Yeah. But here, at one point towards the end, when he crashes and he's got to run around, first of all, I gave him credit for finding a way to get him running into the movie.
Yeah,
I know. I papped Lindsay. I was like, he's doing it because of the arms.
But also, it was so weird to see Maverick, the character, in a hand-to-hand action.
Right,
I was like, wait a minute. This is weird.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I just picture him in a cockpit and take him out of the cockpit.
And then if he gets hit, the plane just blows up. Like, nobody ever bails out and survives, right? Like,
not Goose.
Yeah,
I will Goose, say indeed. I was well. Speaking of Goose, so Miles Teller plays Rooster, Goose's son, and I thought he was great, and I thought he did a really good job of capturing the essence of Anthony Edwards to the point where you can see like he looks like he could be his son.
At some point, the costume designer was like, "You want to be subtle about this?" And they're like, "Nope."
Nope.
How should we make the mustache look? Here's a picture of Anthony Edwards from that movie. Make him look exactly like this. What about the outfit? Same thing.
Apparently, the director wanted to cast Miles Teller, and Tom Cruise didn't want him. And so he photoshopped a mustache on his headshot and sent it to Tom Cruise. And he's like, oh, that's him. It was the mustache that put him over the top.
He just had the essence of Anthony, the body language of Anthony Edwards. Yeah. It wasn't like he looked like him in a face.
I was impressed by the way he portrayed it and the conflict between Tom Cruise's character and his character, and they revealed the history enough for you to like not understand what's happening, but know something happened, and then once you find out, have it make sense and all that sort of stuff. Like they definitely played with that stuff enough. I also think that you didn't need to see the first Top Gun to see this, but there certainly was a hell of a lot of payoff if you did. Yeah. And like little thing, you know, like it was funny because I went to go see this with my sister who loves the first movie, and she watched it before I went to go see it, and she was sitting there just like sticking fingers out every time there was like a nod to the first movie. Mm-hmm. And she was kind of annoyed that Kelly McGillis wasn't in it.
That would have looked so weird.
But then she was like elated when after we saw this and got home and she did some research and digging and find out that Jennifer Connelly's character is referenced in the first movie.
She's a throwaway line in the first movie.
Yeah, she's a throwaway line in the first movie, which is like, she's like, okay, it's in world, so that's good. Like, it definitely hit on the right things.
This leads me to the big question I had watching the movie. And actually, I'm going to put a little pin in that for just a second and talking about references. If you had never seen the first movie, then the entire scenes with like Iceman wouldn't mean anything. Like, why are we doing this in the middle of it? And that was like genuinely emotional. And I remember thinking like, this isn't making me sad for the reason that it should in the movie, but it's making me really sad for a real reason. And I thought that was really interesting. I can't think of a movie where that happened.
I liken it to, and this is not for the reason you just mentioned, but I liken it to the scene in Jaws and talk about the Indianapolis.
Yeah.
In that they stop in the middle of this big action movie to ground it emotionally and give you some emotional stakes.
Yeah, but it's also the emotion you're feeling is because of a real thing that really happened to the actor who you're watching on camera. And that is, and he's alive. It's not like, sometimes a thing will, like if Stan Lee shows up in whatever the last movie was he was in, you had, like in, I think it was Into the Spider-Verse, and he talks and he says a thing and it's really sad, but without having meant to, but you have a feeling. Like, I think I teared up at that point. The first time.
Oh, yeah. That Spider-Verse line by Stan was like, that killed everybody. Yeah.
So this was like that, but it was him still alive, and it wasn't. Oh, it was crazy.
I thought it was a really great scene.
Yes, it was.
That was a really great scene. I thought Tom Cruise was really good in it, too.
Yes. Yeah, totally.
I thought he got to do some real acting in this movie, which is something you don't really think about in a Top Gun.
Certainly not in Top Gun.
He got to do some real acting in it.
Yeah. So, anyway, so to go back, Penny, does she live in Charlie's house? Because that was the same house.
It's the same house.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's weird. And then I was like, wait, does Iceman live in Viper's house?
Because I don't know,
it is the same drive up to the like the nice house on the... Also,
well, you know, they probably have a house that the admirals get to use.
Yeah, probably. Admiral's house, yeah.
My thing is always like, it's been 36 years. He's dated nobody else but Kelly McGillis. Like, he's got to get back together with Kelly
McGillis. Oh, I had no problem with that.
That's just what I said to people all complaining about.
She left. In the movie.
Yeah.
He left. They went their separate ways.
I liked Maverick's career arc where he washed out of being an instructor, which makes sense. And then he goes to basically become Hal Jordan, a test pilot. I love that opening sequence with the stealth.
Yeah, that was very cool.
And him landing and being like, where am I? And kept thinking he's an astronaut. Like, I thought that was all fun.
Why'd they cast Ed Harris in a role that was tiny? Had no...
Just a cameo.
I know.
Yeah, because it was I forget the actor's name in the first movie, but like there's the angry bald, you know,
the guy from
Admiral Mr.
General
Strickland.
Guy. Yeah, Strickland. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was hoping for some Tom Skerritt, little bit of Tom Skerritt, you know, but he's old.
Tom Skerritt had more of the like happy nod, like proud nod thing than John Hamm, who very hilariously came in to be like the uptight police chief who doesn't like what his detectives do.
Yes.
And Ham was Strickland. He was the Strickland character.
Yeah. What I thought was so funny with Ham was that, like, he's doing that bit, but then it was the, you know, God damn it, I might not like you, but damn it, I respect you a bit. You know, like
that line the whole time. I was like, yeah, somebody say it, because that's totally what it was.
And then there was also like, he's doing it. Like the scene when when they're in the training room and Ham is trying to change the direction and they're gonna do the thing that's not gonna work, then all of a sudden they're like, what the hell is he doing? And they see the blip on the screen, and there's lots of like proud nodding to the camera as he does each step. It was just like
what? I thought that was, like, if you want to talk about plot and writing and whatever, like, that's the kind of thing that wouldn't have, because they had to really think of a thing. He washed out. What's he going to do? Tom Cruise goes, I don't know what to do. And I thought, Jesus, what's he going to do? And they came up with a thing. And you want to right away go, well, wait a minute. How do you get the plane? Let's not think about that.
Right, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Don't think about that for a second.
It's Grant Morrison and who inflates the tires on the Batmobile. Right. Don't worry about it. Right?
No, totally. And I'm totally fine with it. But it was a cool solution, and it was excellent plotting, and it worked. It totally worked. And I remember at the beginning, like, you're not flying this mission. And I was like, he's going to fly the mission.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
There's no way he watches the climax of the movie from the ship.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought they did a really good job of sort of tying everyone together. So, like, Hangman and Rooster represent the Iceman-Maverick dynamic from the first film.
Yep.
And in the first film, Iceman's a better pilot than Maverick is.
Yeah, yeah.
Here, Hangman is a better pilot than Rooster is, but he has his own problems, so he gets held back. But then he gets to have his moment. Like, they really tied in everyone's arc really well. Phoenix, as the female pilot, was really awesome.
Hangman also never, there was never actually a conflict. Like, when it came time to do the mission, he did the mission.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I like that, because that's a realistic military thing. Like, you're a group, you're a core. He did the thing where they played football together, and it worked. And then John Hamm did the nod there. I thought that was nice, because it was like, you don't need that conflict, so don't do it.
I was very pleased that they got a coffee-spitting flyby at the end of the movie.
Oh, sure. Yes.
So was the rest of the audience I saw. Would you like to guess John Hamm's character's name? We know it's Cyclone is his call sign, but what is his name?
I don't know.
I couldn't even tell you.
Bo Simpson.
Bo.
B-O or B-A-U? Yeah.
B-E-A-U.
V-A-U-O.
Hangman is Jake Saracen. Like, I don't know any of these people's names.
Don't need to.
But they kept saying Pete Mitchell over and over again.
That I knew. I remembered that one.
Bradley Bradshaw. Why would you do that to a kid?
Well, that's a good point.
I mean, there's a reason why it's doing incredibly well. Like, it's like...
Yeah.
Oh, it's...
Without inflation, it's Tom Cruise's highest grossing film of all time. But obviously, it was just for inflation, things change. But it's kind of crazy.
I was like, oh, you absolutely 1,000,000% would need to see this in a theater. Like, there's, like, I can't think of a movie in recent times that was more like, it will improve it immensely to see it in that.
For all the jokes about Tom Cruise, like, he's right. Yeah. You need to see some of these films in theaters. I like seeing all films in theaters, but I wouldn't want to see this movie for the first time on a TV. No matter how good your TV is, no matter how good your sound
system
is.
Yeah, no, this is definitely a theater. This is definitely a theater.
The sound
Mission Impossible, I want to see Mission Impossible on a theater screen. I don't want to see it at home.
Yep.
He's right to fight for this stuff. He's right to hold on to it. He is the last movie star. Everyone else has done TV. You are not going to see Tom Cruise in a TV show unless everything implodes around him. Until the last moment he can hold on, he is only going to make movies.
You're not going to. I don't think you'll see him. I think it's a really cogent point. I hadn't thought about it. But, like, you're not going to see him in a show. You're not going to see Robert Redford in a show. He's that. And I also like that Tom Cruise, I don't think I like the bit where he was like, I can be a good actor. And it's like, you don't need to do that. Do the thing where you're you. And he's like, okay, I'll just do Mission Impossible and whatever. And like, that's what he does. And he does it well. You don't have to try to go for your Oscar. That's not your thing.
I mean, he was great in Magnolia. I just saw Magnolia at a revival theater a couple of months ago. And I liked it much less the second time I've seen it. But he was great.
Yeah, really, but it's still one of those. But that's like one of those Alec Baldwin and Glengarry roles. He has like his big scene or two and stands out from the rest of the movie, which is one of those sort of Oscar bait kind of things.
But here's my controversial point. We have a lot of actors who can do that. We don't have a lot of actors that can do what Tom Cruise does now.
No, I don't think that's controversial. I think that's basically what I'm saying. Like, do this thing. You don't need to prove the other thing. And I'll say this a lot when we talk about movies. I was like, I can't not see Tom Cruise. And I can't not see Tom Cruise, but I also can't not see George Clooney, and I love George Clooney. And that's their strength. That's their thing.
But that's what movie stars are. You don't watch a Cary Grant movie and he doesn't disappear into the role. It's Cary Grant.
Right.
I did walk out of this saying Tom Cruise is a crazy person.
He is, but he's in the best possible way.
Yeah, yeah.
For all the jokes about him dying on screen, and like, he gives everything
to make a
spectacle for you to enjoy. And
And let me tell you, not a moment goes by in this film where he's either in a jet plane or on a motorcycle.
Well, he's on a boat at one point.
He's on a boat at one point, yeah.
Let's talk about the magic of cinema in that an old man who pulls out his old-ass motorcycle doesn't look like a dipshit.
No, yeah. I give him all the credit in the world.
He looked cool as shit.
And that the jacket with all the patches, right? Like, yeah,
let's think about what most 60 to 70-year-old men would look like pulling out their mid-80s.
Do you think the barbecue place by the convention center is regretting all the Top Gun stuff they put up on the walls that clearly got them cut out of this film?
Wasn't it gone? Isn't it demolished?
Oh, is it gone?
I think it's gone.
Oh, that's a bummer.
They would have shot there if it was still open.
So Tom Cruise currently is 59, so it means he was probably like 56 when he shot this.
Tom Cruise is 59?
Yeah.
I thought he was older.
No, I thought he was older.
He was born in 62.
He's been famous since he was really young. I mean, he was like 22.
He was like 24 when he did the first movie.
Like when it came out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? Just as a thing, one of the funniest things in the movies was like, I'm going back for him. I was like, you're in
Kansas City Barbecue.
Jet.
It's still there. It's totally still there.
Okay. I think they closed it, though, at one point. Maybe they brought it back because the movie was coming out or whatever, but I think it was gone.
Oh, it's totally still there. Yeah.
Anyway, the idea that you can be in a multi-million dollar fighter jet, I'm like, I'm going back for him. I was like, what are you going to do? There was two times.
On their website, kcbbq.net, the first thing that says is the home of Top Gun sleazy bar scenes.
Well, that's not good.
It's not sleazy.
Not sleazy at all. They're just in a bar.
It's a charming,
I know.
Come on, thing.
Oh, I want their ribs now, though.
I know, Josh, you're saying, though, the ending was, at first I was like, what is happening? But then by the end of it, I was like, this is all good. You know, grabbing the original classic plane, getting that out of there.
Oh, totally. That was awesome.
Having no chance against the fifth generation fighter, and then getting their ass saved.
It gave you lots of reasons to root for them.
Yeah.
And like, here's the thing, it felt like an 80s movie.
Yeah.
Well, no, but see, the difference was is that the first movie really didn't have stakes. Like, it kind of did. They were flighting around. But this one, they kept upping the stakes. And, the engine's out. This thing's not moving. I don't know what these switches do. The runway's blown up, and it's too short. You know, those were things that didn't happen in the first one. You know, it just didn't. And so, like, this was, you know, actual stakes and drama and stuff that didn't exist before. The other one was still like, look at this cool shit. And it was posturing, and it was, you know, it was cool. But it was very, very, very surface, and they added a thing to this.
And there's legitimately funny jokes in it.
Yeah.
Really good performances across the board.
It was great. It was great. It was a great time at the movie. I'm glad I went. I saw it in the theater for all those reasons that you said, Connor. Like, I went into it like kind of skeptical, let's say. And I was wrong. It was awesome.
I'm so glad we still have Tom Cruise. I really am. I'm glad there's someone out there making great movies for the theaters.
Yeah.
Or trying to. You know, not always successful, but man, in an age where it would be so easy to just sign up with Netflix for $1 billion, you know, and make 10 movies for them, he's making them for cinemas, and I'm so happy about it.
Yeah.
It's funny, at a certain point, like, I had to come to terms with the fact that the Mission Impossible movies weren't just a crappy licensed movie. I was like, these are actually
so fucking good.
I know that, but like, I just didn't realize it for a bit, you know, because it just seemed like, it's just another licensed property that they're doing a thing of.
I mean, I didn't realize it either until the last set of them.
Yeah.
I missed the entire middle of that.
Yeah.
I dropped out of that franchise. I loved the first one. I love that movie. And then the second one was not that good. And then the third one, I think, was J.J. Abrams directed. I didn't even see it. And then it wasn't until Christopher McQuarrie took over.
Yeah.
I missed the first one in the theaters. I heard it was really good. And the next one's coming out. I said, well, fuck it. And I went and I got all of them. I think I got them all through Netflix. I watched all of them leading up to going to see the new one.
Holy crap.
They're good. really good.
They're not just even good. They're like, they're impressive. You know,
yes.
Like, just in the same way that Top Gun was. They're like doing huge stunts, you know, like James Bond movies.
Great cast.
Practical effects, you know, really trying to impress you. Great cast, yeah. Henry Cavill
they're really good
in the thing where he had something good to do.
So what are we rating Top Gun Maverick?
Ooh, ratings.
I mean, there's different ways to rate it.
I mean,
your heart. Don't think, Josh. Do.
You got to go with just gut and overall theater enjoyment kind of thing. And I give it a solid 4.5.
Yeah, 4.75.
Wow.
4.756.
Wow.
4.25, which is for me is pretty good.
There's the range, 4.25 through 4.769221.
Yeah.
You know, you're graduating with a rope around your neck.
So, we're in the summer now. It's hot. It's 85 degrees in this room right now. I've got my thermometer telling me that.
It wouldn't be an iFanboy podcast without talking about how it's hot.
The next show for July, we want to do a summer mailbag show.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
So, contact@ifanboy.com is where you can write in your emails. Write Media Explode in the subject line so we know it's for this show and not the Pick of the Week show. We got a bunch of emails, but I want to have a lot to choose from. Some are mailbag.
Oh, let's get it done.
And I'm going to tease it now. I've got a game for these guys that they don't know about we can play in addition to the summer mailbag.
Oh, I wanted to play the game tonight. I wanted
to play
the game.
I know, but we're out of time. We'll do it next time. We'll have summer mailbag and game.
Summer mailbag, can we do a little grilling beforehand and do the podcast with like a plate of sausage and ribs in front of us?
I mean, if we want to.
Nope. No, we learned.
You can't eat it on the podcast. No, you get cold. Yeah, you just look at it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm still looking at this Kansas City Barbecue webpage. I really want brisket.
So there you go. That was our June show. Thanks for being a patron. If you are one, unlocking the show for everyone to enjoy at patreon.com/ifanboy. They also unlock the Talksplode and Booksplode comic book review and interview shows that we do. And of course, Josh and I do our weekly Pick of the Week show, which we review the week's comics. All that's found at ifanboy.com. Ron does all about Android, talking about everything Android related.
Listen, if you're upset about having to pay for your Google apps now, you go listen to our podcast.
Are you upset about it, Ron, or how are you taking it?
I thought it was a Philip K. Dick show. I'm completely wrong.
No. Where are you falling on this one, Ron?
I understand where they're coming from. Not everything is free. One of the sins of the internet age was this reliance on things being free forever, and that gravy train is going to end at some point.
Well, there you go. For all the Android hot takes you need, go to All About Android. And we'll be back next month with the summer mailbag. And until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I was trying to think of a call sign, but I wouldn't have a cool call sign. I'd be like Bob. I wouldn't have a good one.
I'll give him credit. Bob made me laugh. That made me
we have our own call signs. We have,
Josh,
have glasses, sideburns, and...
Yeah, you'd be glasses or Hawkeye.
Ooh. I like one of those. They're almost antithetical.
What was mine? Josh was glasses, Ron was sideburns, and I was what?
Bald.
Bald.
Baldy?
Yeah. You're the captain, Baldy. Though.
That yeah, sucks. The captain. Yeah, yeah, but he can't have the captain as your call sign because it's also a rank.
Yeah,
that'd be confusing.
Well, he's captain,
lieutenant,
yeah,
captain.
He'd have to. No, that's awesome.
Captain America.
His helmet and side of his plane would have to say the captain.
The captain. Yeah, yeah.
President Captain America. I forgot about that. That was fantastic.
I will say I was annoyed that the guy was fanboy. I was like, oh come on.
One more letter, just one letter off.
I know.